Present is Senator Phillips, Senator Donnelly, and myself, Senator Sharp. The might note that the previously publicized SCR 3 will not be heard today. The companion bill, HCR 1, passed the House and will be noticed today and heard on Tuesday. So that's the schedule on that one. And that was on the long-range planning task force committee. First, I'd like to take up SB 6, Act Relating to Registration of Motor Vehicle and Suspension of a Driver's License for Failure to Appear in Court or Failure to Pay a Fine. Sponsor Senator Robin Taylor is here. We also have a Sergeant D'Amico of the Department of Public Safety on teleconference to answer any questions if need be. Senator Taylor.
Thank you, Chairman Sharp. It's a pleasure to be here before your committee today on a bill that last year received a vote in the Senate of 17-3. It mirrors California legislation that was passed some years ago in that state and has the effect of encouraging individuals to make their court appearances when they are required to do so under our uniform citation system, and also to pay those outstanding fines that are related to both their moving vehicle violations and also parking offenses. And we encourage people to do that by tying those failures to pay fines to both their, if it's a moving violation, it gets tied to their driver's license, which will not be reissued to them should they have a record of unpaid fines. And it also ties to their vehicle registration on the parking tickets so that they're not going to have a chance to renew and get new license plates for their car if, in fact, there are outstanding parking violations. This has the added benefit of a significant fiscal impact, which I believe is reflected in a fiscal note that is advantageous to the state, in that tremendous number of hours of state trooper time for the service process and other rudimentary items will no longer have to be done. I also believe that it will have a very beneficial impact on the district court level, especially in your larger urban communities, because of the tremendous amount of wasted time for people that fail to show. It's my understanding from Department of Public Safety that approximately 25,000 traffic citations go unpaid each year in Alaska, and those are just on moving violations. So I think we're looking at quite a increase in income that will also occur, or revenue that will also occur, both for communities and for the state by implementing this very simple process. That's all I have.
Questions of the sponsor and committee members? I would note for the record that Senator Lehman, committee member, is here.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. We also have in the audience Juanita Hensley with the Department of Public Safety, Department of Motor, Division of Motor Vehicles, for answer any questions if the committee has any questions. And we also, I would ask if on teleconference or on the telephone, if Sergeant D'Amico is there and if he has anything to add to the testimony by the sponsor. Are you there, sir?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chairman. My name is First Sergeant Joe D'Amico with the Alaska State Troopers. I don't have any additional testimony, but I am available if there's any questions regarding the troopers' the handling of this bill.
Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Questions?
Does the administration have a position on the legislation? Fiscal note statement, but I didn't see like a position statement from the department.
Department, is there a position statement or a comment? Juanita Hensley.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Juanita Hensley. I'm the Chief of Driver Services for the Division of Motor Vehicles. I am here to testify basically on the technicalities of the bill and how it would be administered. I believe that the administration would be neutral on this bill at this time. We have no way, one way or the other, as long as this bill doesn't impact us any further physically, it would be perfectly fine with us.
So,
as
far as your testimony then, that you don't feel it would be, or you think it's doable, to pick up these fines at the time of, off the computer at the time they're applied for re-registration?
Mr. Chairman, what this bill actually does, it would require the court to, that the court may suspend a driver's license for failure to appear to pay a moving violation. And for those municipalities that have parking offenses, it would allow an electronic update of the vehicle record to be placed by the motor vehicle, by the municipality on the motor vehicle file. And before we would register a vehicle, we would require the person to have their parking fines paid and show us proof of that. Before we would reissue a driver's license to a person after the license was suspended, we would require proof from the court that those traffic citations have and the fines have been paid, and then we would reissue that. This bill does allow and would require a reinstatement fee upon that reissuance of the driver's license, so that would be a revenue generator for the state.
Any other questions? What's the pleasure of the committee?
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Phillips.
I move, assuming there's no amendments being proposed, I move Senate Bill number 6 out of the committee to the next committee referral, which would be Mr. Taylor's committee, Judiciary.
Without objection, SB 6 moves on to the next committee.
Next is you. There's a race between you and Taylor here. I've written her two letters.
At the risk of losing one of our many members, we'll move on to the other one. Strategically, I should move to the bottom. let's take up SCR 4. Naming the Port Laird of Alaska, sponsored by Senator Lamon. Senator Lamon.
Mr. Chairman, I introduce SCR 4. Which names the Poet Laureate of Alaska as Tom Sexton. Mr. Sexton is a professor emeritus at the University of Alaska and is a resident of my district. My understanding about why we do this is that we need to, the legislature needs to do it via resolution, and that's why I've introduced it. But he has been selected unanimously by the Alaska State Council on the Arts Committee, which is the Living Poets Laureate of Alaska, and the council's literature panel. And I just got done, got off the phone talking with one of the people on the Arts Council who gave a glowing report that she said that he served on her thesis committee, and his poetry is outstanding. There's some examples in the packet that you might want to read if maybe you hadn't not had a chance to. And I like it, and it's Alaskana poetry in it. All reports I have are that he would be a good representative for the state of Alaska as Poet Laureate. So I recommend him to you.
Senator Donald.
Mr. Chairman, the way this works is every 2 years we pick somebody to be Poet Laureate.
That's my understanding, is that they're chosen through that process and then the legislature ratifies it, I guess, through a resolution. And I don't know if they serve for 2 years or longer. I don't, maybe somebody else can testify to that, but I remember that there was, in the time I've been in legislature, there's been a new poet laureate chosen in the past.
You see, it mentions in the resolution that the person's term expired this year, and I was just wondering, so this is for a term of 2 years.
Yeah. But what I'm saying is I don't know if that's a renewable term. Maybe that's what we've done in the past.
I would guess that since it's a resolution by the legislature, that it only lasts the term of this legislature. Yeah.
Thanks, sir.
Yeah. 2 years.
Any other questions? Pleasure of the committee on SCR 4.
I'll do it. You don't want to do it. I'll move the bill and the resolution with individual recommendations.
SCR 4 moves out with individual recommendations. Let's see. Is representative from Senator Kelly's office. Yes, Josh, right there. Okay. Looking right through you. Let's take up SB 37, an act relating, SJR 11, proposed amendments to the Constitution of the State of Alaska relating to terms of legislators.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Josh Fink. I'm an aide to Senator Kelly, who unfortunately was not able to make it to this hearing today.
The end of his term?
This legislation was introduced, or something very similar to it, by Senator Lehman last year, and they discussed it this go-around and agreed that Senator Kelly would introduce it. This is a little different in that it sets the limit on terms rather than years, and I believe Senator Lehman's bill set a maximum number of years, and we set it by terms, full terms, to address the problem when someone is appointed, or in reapportionment where someone's four-year term becomes a two-year term. Anyhow, SJR 11 proposes a constitutional amendment to limit the length of legislative service for state senators and representatives. Under this resolution, a person may serve up to four full two-year terms as a representative and two full four-year terms as a senator. After that, the person may not serve in the legislature again until at least 2 years has lapsed. And that's actually 23 months. That's a month shy of 2 years, and that's is when you register, when you go to the, you enter an election, and then when the term ends, because legislature starts in January, we need to do it 13 months. Otherwise, you would have been cut out 3 years. Limiting terms of elected officials has been a popular cause in Alaska and the entire country for many years. In 1990, three states enacted term limits. Two of those states were by initiative. Of course, we don't have the initiative process here in Alaska for constitutional amendments, and that's why a resolution is necessary. And then in 1992, 12 more states passed term limits, and then in 94, we had an additional four states. So now 19 states since 1990 have enacted term limits on their state legislators. The idea, it's pretty simple. Professional political life is inconsistent with good representative government, and the basic premise behind a democratic republic is that of a citizen legislator or citizen legislators serving for a limited period of time to represent their fellow citizens, then returning to live among them. The longer they are apart from that community, the more remote they become. The advantages to adopting a limit on legislative terms are several. They include opening the opportunity to serve in the legislature for more people, with an emphasis on citizen rather than career legislator, enhancing legislative turnover with an improved influx of new people and ideas, reducing widespread cynicism that many people feel toward government by making the legislature more representative of a broader cross-section of Alaska, and diminishing the advantages of incumbency and seniority so that merit would play a larger role in legislative power. Here in Alaska, voter support for term limits has ranged between 70 to 80%, according to the pollsters I talked to this last week, over the past decade. In fact, ballot measure 1, limiting the term of our state's congressional office holders, passed on November 8th. 72.7% of the voting electorate voting in favor, and I was told by some of the pollsters that would have been considerably higher were it not for the favorable regard for our congressional delegation. In addition, voters have passed term limits on municipal mayors, assemblymen, and school board members whenever presented with the opportunity, and delegates at the state's constitutional convention, of course, imposed a limit of two full consecutive terms on our governor. In spite of this, while more than 20, and the sponsor statement is incorrect, it's been more than 20 term limit resolutions for state legislators have been introduced in the state legislature since 1977, none have passed. Senator Kelly believes it's time that the people of Alaska, he believes, clearly want term limits, and it's time that they have an opportunity to vote on it in a statewide election. If passed, this proposed constitutional amendment will be placed before the voters in the next general election for ratification. That concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. I can answer any questions that I am able to answer.
Questions of the committee? Senator Lamb.
Josh, there's quite a similarity between this resolution and what I introduced, but there's also a substantial difference. And I just want, the similarity is that they're both term limit measures. The difference is in the length of the term. What I had previously, and I think it probably was in at least the last two legislatures, probably, and I have to go back and check both the 17th and 18th, I had the 8 years, or I should say 8/10, with the allowance for finishing out the Senate term. If you're caught in the middle of a term and you're at the end of the eight, you could finish that out, and that would bring it to 10 with the 2 years off, and then you could run again. In the resolution that you have here, it's actually 8
plus 8/10. You know, in other words, you could do 8 in the House and 8 or 10 in the Senate. So the difference is substantial. Is, you know, there's an 8-year difference. So I just want to clearly, you know, state there's a substantial difference. My preference is to go with, you know, would be the probably the 8 or 10 or perhaps 12. But, you know, I think getting to the other, you know, kind of defeats the purpose of term limits. I'm not totally. I still think it's better. I support it. I think it's better than what we have now. And additionally, my preference, and I've talked to Senator Kelly about it, is that the out period probably ought to be 4 years minimum. I think, you know, consistent with what we require for the governor. A governor can sit out a term, a four-year term, and be eligible to run again, as we've seen with former Governor Egan doing that. And former Governor Hickel also came back after a more substantial break than that. But you know, I've not prepared amendments to make that change, but I just want to note that now, and I'm not planning to submit that amendment in this committee, but I do want to at least note the differences.
Any other comments from committee members?
Are there any other people to testify?
Thank you, Joe.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Do we have anyone else in the audience that would care to testify that didn't have a chance to sign up? I would just note as an update to the term limit statistics that's in the files that 1992 was even more dramatic than 1990. Approximately a third of the Senate was new members, and 23 out of 40 of the House members were new members that 1 year. Some of them returning, but they hadn't been in the House for a while. So the ballot box pretty well limited a bunch of terms, and a lot of people also chose not to run again. So there was quite a change in makeup of 1992 bodies.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think this is a pretty reasonable proposal. My concern is that we don't look at the big picture, what other effects these kinds of things have on the balance of power and the separation of powers in the state. There's an awful lot of things in the Constitution need to be fixed, and frankly, a lot of them limit or put restraints upon appropriate powers of the legislature vis-a-vis the executive branch. And for us, it seems like we continually address things like this that put more limits on legislative power rather than looking at some of the things that we need to do around here to properly exert legislative authority also, and maybe to limit some of the executive branch authority. Yeah. So I support this, but I really feel uncomfortable doing this in a micro analysis rather than a macro analysis of the total picture of the separation of powers in this state. And I think we're way behind in examining that. And I can think of a whole laundry list of specifics there. So I think this is a pretty good proposal for term limits, but I feel really uncomfortable supporting just this and not some of the other things we need to do with the Constitution also.
Any other comments from committee members? Pleasure of the committee. Senator Lehman.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we discharge from committees SJR 11 with individual recommendations.
Mr. Chairman, under discussion?
Discussion.
I was wondering if the chair would be willing to have a meeting where we took some time to discuss some of the other elements in the Constitution that logically need revision. And just to give the committee some examples I've considered is updating the way we call special sessions, because currently it's almost impossible for the legislature to call itself in a special session, so it all rests with the executive branch. I think that would be very important for the separation and balance of powers in the state to update that provision of the Constitution. Providing for confirmation of the boards of these public corporations, which didn't exist at the time of statehood, so we don't have confirmation power over them, yet they act like full departments, and yet we have no jurisdiction over them as far as, you know, just even a confirmation of who's running them. And, you know, if they weren't there, they would be the function of a department, which we would constitutionally have the power to confirm. I think the only reason it's not in the Constitution is because they didn't exist at the time of statehood. Possibly considering elected attorney general. This is just one that should be on the table to be discussed, I think. There's a lot of these important questions, I think, and yet, you know, the public wants better government. That's their ultimate goal, not necessarily term limits. And I think all those things would help, you know, balance this out. And I also think that if we're going to have term limits, although this is a pretty liberal proposal, I think it's pretty reasonable, and I'm going to support it. I also think there ought to be an option for the key positions in the legislature to be full-time. I think the Speaker of the House, President of the Senate, possibly the finance chairs, should have an option to become full-time at those jobs so they can do those jobs well, because if you're going to limit their time here, it's going to be harder and harder to develop the institutional expertise to counteract full-time bureaucrats and a very powerful bureaucracy when it comes to budget matters. And I think it would be a really important thing to consider to allow the presiding officers and the finance chairs, maybe budget and audit, to elect whether they want to go full-time and forgo all outside income. You know, just take a fair salary, not have any outside income, so you remove any conflict of interest, just as with a commissioner or something else, so that at least the institution would have a couple key people in position with the expertise to counter what you're going to be giving up if you make everybody short time. And those are just some of the things that I'd like to discuss at a meeting, you know, just maybe have a general meeting on those with those discussions. And maybe it's things we don't want to do, maybe it's things we do want to do, but I'm going to support this, but I do feel uncomfortable doing it in a vacuum of just this one issue when there's some real other important things that this will impact out there, I think.
Good comments.
I forgot campaign reform and constitutional amendment for regulations.
Oh, yeah. Regulations.
Yeah, I'll certainly consider that. I'll get together with you, and maybe we can pick up some topics and have just a brain trust meeting at the committee and some other experts in the field. I, too, am getting more and more dismayed at looking at some of the expenditures of the quasi-public corporations out there and the vast amount of money they have in their budgets with no legislative oversight whatsoever. Not even confirmation on the directors. So something that I think we should look at and seriously discuss. If we're looking at the rest of budgets, some of those agencies have budgets larger than the departments. Something you might want to look at. Senator Lehman.
Throwing in ideas, one of my favorites is session length. And I counter to what some people think, by shortening the session, they think that we're giving more power to the bureaucracy. I think we're empowering ourselves, bringing in a new breed of people who can be able to serve in the legislature. So I throw that one in as a discussion item.
Good. Any other comments?
Oh, I'm just joking. Can we put term limitations for bureaucrats, too?
We can try.
Yeah, I'd like to do that. Well, that would be truly equal footing.
No further discussion and no objection. Okay. The SJR 11 moves out of committee with individual rec. We are SBR 37, SB 37, an act relating to treatment of permanent fund dividends for purpose of determining eligibility for certain benefits.
You didn't write on.
I voted out of committee.
We have Senator Phillips, a prime sponsor. Mayor, are you making the presentation or?
Mr. Chairman, my statement is going to be very brief and to the point because I do know there's other people who want to testify and have an interest in this bill. And for the record, my name is Randy Phillips, representing Senate District L. Senate Bill 37 is an act relating to the treatment of permanent fund dividends for the purposes of determining eligibility or certain benefits. Basically, this legislation is to end the whole harmless provision of the permanent fund dividend, and this provision would allow welfare recipients to receive their permanent fund dividend without experiencing any reductions to their public benefits, without experience any reductions in public assistance benefits. In 19 FY96 funding, the whole harmless provision cost about $22 million, over $22 million, coming to about $41.45 per recipient of the permanent fund dividend itself. By the year 2000, this will be projected to over $48. And I might add that from my constituents' point of view, that this amounts to a tax on each Alaskan's dividend check, and this is the only tax taken away in the from the check. And with the elimination of the whole harmless provision, the permanent fund dividends are received by welfare recipients would be treated as an income, just like the dividends dividend checks received by any other Alaskan. Mr. Chairman, that's basically my comments on this bill.
Any questions of the sponsor at this time? We have Elmer Lindstrom from the Department of Health and Social Services Commissioner's Office to testify. Would you please state your name and affiliation for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Elmer Lindstrom. I'm Special Assistant to Commissioner Perdue in the Department of Health and Social Services. The Department of Health and Social Services is opposed to passage of Senate Bill 37. Previous administrations have considered elimination of the Permanent Fund Dividend Hold Harmless Program, but have concluded that elimination is neither desirable nor cost-effective. The last legislature apparently reached the same conclusion. Legislation eliminating the Hold Harmless Program introduced in the previous legislature did not pass. Elimination of the Hold Harmless will lead to additional administrative costs in the Division of Public Assistance. Currently, special interagency agreements exist between the Division of Public Assistance and the federal government, which reduce the amount of case processing required when recipients receive dividends. Elimination of the Hold Harmless Program will nullify these agreements. With the elimination of the program, administrative efforts to process Hold Harmless entitlements would be supplanted by additional case processing efforts to suspend public assistance payments when dividends are distributed. The net general fund cost to the state is calculated to be in excess of $500,000 if the Hold Harmless program is eliminated. Elimination of the Hold Harmless provisions would also result in increased demands on the general relief program, which is funded entirely by the state. The division has calculated this additional general fund cost to be in excess of $1 million. In short, while the elimination of the Hold Harmless will show a net reduction in public assistance payments to individuals, there will be a net cost in state general funds. This is because the cost of the Hold Harmless program is borne not by the general fund, but by the earnings of the permanent fund itself. The department is also extremely concerned about the impact of the elimination of the Hold Harmless on individual clients. All of the recipients are poor. The Hold Harmless funds replace federal and state funds, which go only to persons who meet strict eligibility requirements. These individuals are poor families with dependent children, the aged, the blind, and the disabled. It is important to note that over the past several years, all recipients of Hold Harmless funds have already seen a reduction in their benefits. 2 years ago, legislation was passed which reduced payments to clients in the Aid to Families with Dependent Children and Adult Public Assistance programs. The same legislation eliminated the automatic cost of living adjustments for these programs. No cost of living adjustment has been made since that time, nor is one included in the budget bill released in December. The savings to the state generated by the legislation passed 2 years ago were and continue to be significant. Also, a number of bills have been introduced this session, which, if passed, would have a substantial impact on persons currently eligible for Hold Harmless funds. At least one of these bills proposes a further reduction in the basic benefits provided families with dependent children, the aged, the blind, and the disabled. The cumulative impact of past reductions to benefits, elimination of the Hold Harmless program, and possible further reduction in benefits would simply be too great. Finally, when considering Senate Bill 37, it is important to remember the basic premise of the Hold Harmless program. That premise is that all Alaskans are entitled to share in the benefits of the Alaska Permanent Fund Dividend Program. Elimination of the Hold Harmless provision would have the practical effect of denying the most needy of all Alaskans, poor families with dependent children, the aged, the blind, and the disabled, the benefits of the Permanent Fund Dividend Program. In your packet, you should have a summary of a 1989 survey conducted by the Division of Public Assistance, which describes how clients make use of their permanent fund dividend check. The pattern that emerges is one of expenditures on basic expenses, food, clothing, household expenses, and payment on bills. Elimination of the Hold Harmless program will mean poor individuals and families on assistance will have fewer resources to meet these basic needs. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have. You should also have in your packet a series of six fiscal notes which lay out the fiscal implications of the bill. And there are other staff here from the department, from the Division of Public Assistance and the Division of Medical Assistance, who could speak to those fiscal notes and specific questions you have on them.
Question. Senator Lehman.
Elmer, is there anybody here from the Division of Public Assistance? I don't recognize, now that Jan Hansen's not here anymore, I don't know who is.
Mr. Chairman, for the information of the committee, the acting division director is a gentleman by the name of Jim Dolman, and here today is a public assistance program officer, Mr. Kurt Lomas, who does most of the number crunching and the analysis of these sorts of bills.
Okay, I guess you said a number of things there, and I don't agree with a number of things that you've said, but I understand why you're saying them, just like you understand why the legislature either acted or did not act on something last year. And number one, when you state that, you said it has the practical effect of denying the dividend, I mean, that's carefully worded and cleverly worded, but it isn't true. They get a permanent fund dividend. The effect is that we reduce the drain on the U.S. and state treasury for welfare benefits. When we stop and think about what welfare is supposed to be anyway, it's a backup system to catch people who are somehow slipping through the cracks. It shouldn't be the first line of defense anyway. And so that premise, and to state that, I mean, it makes it sound like we're taking something that all Alaskans should share in and taking it away. And that is really not what's happening. The other, and the reason I asked the question, Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry for getting on the soapbox, I could probably talk for a long time about this, but in the Division of Public Assistance, that's why I asked if anybody's here, have you talked to the people in the line staff in Division of Public Assistance about this, about who's coming into the program, why they're coming to Alaska, what's bringing them here? You talked about the ever so small, although you didn't put the adjective on it, that we adjusted the AFDC payments. It was probably something like $15. But the delta between California and Alaska is something like $300 per family, and it's driving people from other states, and it's acting as a magnet. The people at the line staff level provide evidence. I mean, I've had many of these people provide evidence to me, and they said, one of the biggest abuses is this, the Hold Harmless provision, and they'd like to see it go. I mean, their testimony is quite different from yours, and that's why I find it intriguing. Are they telling me one thing and telling you another, or are you not talking to them? These are people, many of whom have worked in the Division of Public Assistance for years and years and years, who are saying this. And so, how is it that you come to your position statement when these people who are working at that front line are saying something different?
Mr. Chairman, if I may.
Can I just add a just a couple
let
things?
Let him have a chance to respond.
Go on Lauren's saying, I've had the same experiences with constituents in my own district that work on the front lines that tell me these things. So I'm only amplifying what Lauren's own constituents are saying, who work on the front lines, and we're arriving at the same conclusion.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, a number of hopefully can answer some of the questions raised and maybe some general sort of comments. The bill that you have before you today is dealing specifically with the permanent fund dividend hold harmless program. As we all know, there is a lot of discussion underway in this building, in this state, and the nation as a whole relating to the broader question, the much broader question of welfare reform. Governor Knowles has committed to the legislature and the people to develop a program to try to address some of the concerns relating to the existing welfare programs. If we could all wipe the slate clean and we had no public assistance programs, no permanent fund dividend program for that matter, and we were going to start from the very beginning to develop a program to meet the needs of the needy people of this state or this country, it certainly wouldn't look at all like the programs that we have today. But still, the world is the way the world is, and the programs that are in place are what my department have to administer. We recognize, as does everyone, that there are fixes that need to be made to the welfare system. But I think it's dangerous to focus solely on the problems and ignore the basic fact that the programs serve a valuable purpose, and that is to provide sustenance, basic, the ability to live for many poor people in the state, families with dependent children, the aged, the blind, the disabled. And it works real well for the majority of people who are on the programs. The majority of our AFDC caseload turns over in a period of 2 years. Over 66% of approximately 60% of the population on the program has turned over, is my recollection. So there are problems with a percentage of the population on some of these programs, and they need to be looked at. But I was not being facetious or trying to be clever by pointing out the serious nature of this reduction, because for the majority of those families, it is going to be a significant cut in the funds that they have for their basic living expenses. Referring back to a rateable reduction, the bill that passed 2 years ago, the senator is absolutely correct. That was relatively modest, I think 1.7% or 2%. This bill alone, if you translated it into terms of a rateable reduction, and I'm speaking off the top of my head, but I believe it would be something approaching 8% or of that magnitude. So it's very significant. And perhaps I'll let it go at that, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
I guess I have a question looking through all these fiscal notes. Do these amounts represent just the federal share, or is it also the state share of the amount of benefits that's lost, which is already appropriated anyway? Are we making the department whole for the total amount of benefits received by those people for that particular month when the dividend check comes in, or is it just a percentage paid by the federal government that won't pay it if their income's so high? Limits. So what I'm getting at, is this a supplemental appropriation of the department, or is it just for the federal loss of federal dollars?
Mr. Chairman, the permanent fund dividend hold the people harmless, both for the state share of their benefit as well as the federal share of their benefit. Both AFDC, for example, is a federal participation program that is 50% general fund and 50% federal fund. The hold harmless makes up the loss of both the federal and the state contribution.
Any further questions of the Mr. Lindstrom? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
The next one we have signed up to testify is Rupe Andrews. Rupe, you care to step forward and identify yourself and your affiliation for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Rupe Andrews, and today I'm representing the American Association of Retired Persons in Alaska. The AARP is strongly opposed to SB 37 for a number of reasons. One, about 40,000 Alaskans, as I have read the technical analysis of this bill, receive aid to dependent families with children. Children would be affected substantially by this legislation, as well as other Alaskans, but children are going to pay a big bill here on this one, as well as the elderly and the poor. We also find it somewhat strange to see what the benefit to the state is, because if you eliminate the hold harmless, as we just heard, about $1.5 million will have to come out of the general fund. But Senator Phillips has also raised the problem that this continues to escalate and grow and could be much higher than the present $41 or $40. As an option, you know, we would ask that you consider just capping this. Don't throw it all out, but just cap it at, say, like $40. This program has been in effect since 1982, and it has worked, and we're not aware of a great number of Alaskans being concerned about this. In fact, initially, as I remember this act in 82, Alaskans felt proud to be able to help other Alaskans that couldn't help themselves. This directly affects poor and elderly people as well as children. I think that concludes my testimony, Mr. Chairman. If there's any questions.
Senator Phillips.
Well, it's not a question, but I think it was up to 1986 that the whole harmless was paid out of the state general fund, and then it switched from state general fund to the permanent fund dividend.
It could have happened that way.
It did.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'll stand corrected, yeah.
You know, it's, you know, if this state government wants to make a decision to spend another $22 million of state general fund dollars to cover it, and that's the policy decision that both bodies have to make, but to force this on to 500 and some odd other thousand Alaskans to pay this, this is what a lot of my constituents object to because they don't believe it's fair. It's a tax.
Any other comments or questions? Senator Lehman?
Roop, in response to the last part of your statement, you said a lot of Alaskans are proud to be able to help others who are in need. I think you're correct. But my question to you is, do you think they would rather have forced compassion or voluntary? I mean, do you feel good, or perhaps when you were working, you know, I don't know what you're in, you know, now, but do you think most people feel good on April 15th, you know, essentially to have that, when the day of reckoning comes and you have the forced compassion put on them, or do you think they feel better when they see somebody who's hungry or cold or in need to help them, give them a meal, give them clothing, give them a place to stay? Which do you think really gives people the greater feeling of compassion, the greater feeling of satisfaction?
Mr. Chair, obviously, if people voluntarily do things, I think, you know, you're correct that they feel better. But as I understand, this came about through an action of the legislature, through representative government that was elected by the people, and through the experience and wise decision and debate of the legislature. And since that's happened, there really hasn't, at least to our attention anyway, we haven't heard that much comment that people were objecting to it. Apparently in your particular districts, you know, you're hearing that now.
Well, I've been hearing it for more just now, the last 4 or 5 years.
But we would, you know, we would ask that you go back and take a look, and rather than just throw it out, at least put some reasonable cap on the thing and retain it, because otherwise it's going to have to come out of the general fund someplace.
Mr. Chairman, can I give a little history
Senator
here?
Senator Phillips?
Actually, that amendment came on this side of the room. It was the wall right where you were. And it was actually, Senator Vic Fisher is the one that inserted that in the dividend in 81. But it was an amendment that he had put through. And it was actually in this part of the room when it was done those days.
How did you vote?
I voted no on all of it.
Any other questions for Mr. Andrew?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
No dividends, no one, everything.
We have Tom Williams here from the PFD division for any questions that committee members might have of him. No questions? No questions, Tom. And that's all I have. Is there anyone else in the audience that didn't get a chance to sign up that wants to test? Senator Phillips.
Oh, come on, Sherry. This would not be complete without you testifying against it.
Ms. Phillips has been here enjoying the philosophical debate.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Sherry Gall. I'm representing the Alaska Women's Lobby and Kid PAC. And I did not sign up because I did not intend to speak on this issue, but as you point out, I do, the groups that I represent do have an opinion, and that opinion is not to support this legislation. We are in support of the Hold Harmless program. We do think From my own personal point of view, as I sit in the audience and as I've had several legislators in the last few weeks speak to me about this tax on the permanent fund dividend, I can't help feeling that people should explain to those constituents. I mean, it's hard for me to understand. You talk about enforced compassion. And when I pay my taxes on April 15th, I'm not at all happy about some of the ways the federal government spends my money. But I understand that's my responsibility. And permanent fund dividend money is not earned income. It is not something that any one of those people who are complaining about their $47 tax have earned or deserve in any way better, a rich person better than a poor person. And people should understand that that's not a tax, but it's something that their percentage of what was given out has been lowered for this reason, but they're still benefiting by $950 that they wouldn't have ever had before. And when a person of moderate or high income gets that $950, they can give it to Mark Air and buy however many tickets and go on their vacation to Hawaii or whatever. And a poor person, when they get their permanent fund dividend, believe me, they don't go to Hawaii. Whatever you want to believe about people on welfare, they are not taking vacations in Hawaii. If they have that additional $1,000, they spend it on filling up their oil tank for several months so that they don't have to worry about their fuel. They buy clothing and food for their children. They buy plastic soap dishes and things that they haven't been able to afford all year. And they spend it right here in Alaska. That money, that additional boost of income to the elderly, blind, and disabled, as you've heard, to those poor children, is spent here in Alaska, whereas other people's permanent fund dividend money is not necessarily spent on those things and is spent on luxury. And I think that it is really not a very fair and balanced thing to do to favor the moderate income and high income people, people who do not need the additional money, to say, well, we want to protect your right to have as much of this permanent fund money as you can have, and what we're going to do is make sure that those poor people lose their ability to pay their rent. $900, or even if they have two children, $3,000 is not going to make a family self-sufficient for that year. So they do get kicked off the public assistance program for that month, or actually probably a couple of months after they receive the dividend. But it's not like they're going to be able to stay off of welfare because they received a few thousand dollars of windfall money like everyone else did in October. So we feel that it's not an equitable way to deal with the permanent fund dividend program, and I think if we are looking to save money, we ought to take a look at capping the dividend program and not just continue to provide free money to people who have no needs while we keep trying to take money away from the poorest citizens in our state. Thank you.
Questions for committee?
Mrs. Gall leaves me on, so. she inspires me. When I see her in the audience, I get inspired. The article she wrote in the Kit Back.
Sure, your inspiration when
I saw it. I should have brought it. The article you wrote on my efforts to trash children and poor people inspires me to move on, because, Sherry, my objective is to make sure that the poor, the needy, the aged, the blind, and our children are properly taken care of. I'm not interested in taking money away from them. You know, those are your terms, not mine. You know, all I'm trying to do, you know, in an overall reformation of a welfare system, is to transfer how that is delivered to these people. I don't think that an inefficient government delivery system is the best way to provide this compassion to people who have needs. Now, do I think they have needs? Absolutely. There are needy people. And I think even you would agree that the best way to provide for their needs isn't the way that's being done now. And you know, and that's what we need to do. We need to focus on the real way to take care of their needs. You know, it's not looking at it as taking their money away from them. I mean, it's you know, this whole concept of you know, it's their money is a wrong concept, and so we're taking it away from them. Now, you know, we should be providing needs through a way that will help take care of the needs and help make many of these people self-sufficient. Part of my soapbox, but I don't know what more of a statement than anything else. And you know, you talked earlier, you know, the equity in terms of the permanent fund is that they still are eligible to receive that. And this doesn't take away their eligibility to receive the permanent fund dividend. They still have access to it just like anybody else.
Through the chair, I would just say that, of course, they still have access to it, and their choice would then be, I would think that most people who are living at that bare subsistence level, that we support people, even though our welfare payments are higher than some other states. I don't think that anybody in this building or out there who understands how people on welfare are living really imagines that people are living in luxury. I mean, all you have to do is look for housing in Juneau to understand how far $821 is going to take you if that's your entire amount of money that you have. And I think that indeed what we're doing here is telling those people, if you have two children, you're definitely going to choose to have your permanent fund dividend check, and you're going to get off of the program. I mean, you will be eliminated from the program. And then as soon as you have spent that $3,000, which is not going to last you all year, you will reapply. And what that will do is not lessen our caseloads. I mean, I assume that the goal of everyone in the administration and in the legislature and people all over the nation who want to see welfare reform want to see people be able to become self-sufficient so that our caseloads and our basic payments will be less. And I just don't believe that by eliminating the hold harmless will lead to self-sufficiency for these families. What it will lead to is them getting off the program and then reapplying as soon as the money is spent down and they are eligible again, because they will still need to, I mean, they will be faced with eviction unless they have somehow developed self-sufficiency between October and December.
Any other questions or Ms. Gall? Thank you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Mr. Lindstrom. Have a seat. Can I have the committee substitute?
Thank you again, Mr. Chairman. Elmer Lindstrom from the Department of Health and Social Services. We have a problem with the effective date on the bill as was drafted. I did speak to the sponsor's office previously. As drafted, under Section 4, this act takes effect January 1, 1996. That would place the effective date right in the middle of that point of that period of time where the hold harmless is in play. And you would have perhaps half of the recipients on one side of the line and half on the other side of the line. We would prefer, if it is your desire to move this bill, that there be an effective date prior to October 1 of 1995. If it is your intention, there be no hold harmless next year, or prior to October 1, 1996, if it is your desire, there be no hold harmless for the subsequent year.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, the committee substitute has July 1st, 1995. I don't know. Did you get a CS for that?
Mr. Chairman, no, I did not.
Okay. I have it as July 1st, 1995.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you for the information. We do have a CS on the file.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Phillips.
Need a motion?
You adopt the CS, yes.
I move that we adopt the CS for Senate Bill 37, State Affairs.
C version, huh?
Yep.
Any objection? The committee substitute for Senate Bill number 37 has been adopted. That's a pleasure to come in.
Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill 37, State Affairs, with individual recommendations to the next committee referral, which I think is finance.
Finance. It is finance. Any objections? CS for Senate Bill number 37 moves out of committee. Individual recommendations. Next committee is Senate Finance.
They deserve.
Hold off on this. The next item we had on the agenda was SB 40. Mm-hmm. we had scheduled Randy Welker with the Legislative Budget and Audit. He's in another committee meeting upstairs. Legislative Budget and Audit is having a hearing at the present time.
You want me to go get him?
We will. Let's see, Bob Martino, would you be available the next? Are you a resident of Juneau?
Sir, I work for Department of Revenue.
Oh, okay.
Here?
So,
yes.
Well, then my intention would be to hold this over till next Tuesday so that Randy Welker, who will be the key person to give us an update on the audit, talk to us about it, and I would hope that you could come back at that time. Thank you. Anything else to come before?
You can get Randy down here if you want.
He wants him up there.
Okay.
Yeah. Anything else to come before the committee? We stand adjourned.